After a nightmare vacation, how easy will it be to sue?
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From 8 p.m. in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, February the 15th. And the 4,200 passengers who were stranded for days on that disabled cruise ship have finally disembarked. They went straight for the hot showers after days without air conditioning, working toilets, or adequate food. Carnival has offered all of Triumph's passengers a full refund, plus a voucher for a future trip, and $500. But for those who still want to sue, it won't be easy, as Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports.
For haggard Triumph passengers thinking of lawyering up, Julian Bray, a cruise industry analyst, has advice.
If they care to take a look at their booking documents, the cruise line has actually got itself covered for just about everything.
I've got a copy here, 9 pages, single-spaced, down in Section 11. Carnival shall not be liable to the passengers for damages for emotional distress, mental suffering, anguish, or psychological injury of any kind under any circumstances, except when such damages were caused. Basically,
even if it's an extreme situation of wading through the sewage, you can't sue just because you had a bad cruise experience, because you haven't sustained a physical injury or illness.
Jim Walker is a lawyer who specializes in cruise ship cases.
They call us cruise ship chasers.
Kind of like an ambulance chaser that can swim. But Walker says cruise ship contracts are so restrictive, the chase rarely pays off. Still, frustrated but not injured Carnival customers take heart. Imagine working on a disabled ship with thousands of angry passengers, where you're the one cleaning up all that sewage. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
Well, today, the athletic sportswear company Under Armour is opening a new store in Baltimore, but it's nothing like the rest of the stores in its chain. Instead of working to attract male customers, Under Armour is looking to attract more female shoppers. Tracy Samuelson reports.
An early slogan of the company was, "We must protect this house," chanted by super sweaty football types.
Will you protect this house?
I will.
Under Armour.
You listen to the presentations by the management, and it's like they're halftime pep rallies. And that's great, and it's worked, you know, phenomenally well.
But Sean McGowan from Needham & Company also says that early attempts to attract more women could be summed up with this strategy. Make men's clothes smaller and pink. Now the new store, which also has men's and kids' gear, is a lighter, cheerier store experience. Chelsea Kasner is a brand planner with Just Ask a Woman. She says brighter colors are a good start.
If you can bring a little element of surprise to make her feel like she's having a glamorous moment in a sweaty gym, that's key.
It's also key to the company's growth prospects. Women's sales were less than half of men's sales last year. In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
There are a lot of things that can affect your financial behavior. How much you make, of course, and how much debt you have. Then there are more subtle things at play, like the news or the weather. And then, says economist Keith Chen at Yale University, there's the language you speak. Professor Chen joins us now to explain. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
Well, so what do you mean when you say that language can impact our economic behavior?
Languages differ very, very widely in whether or not the future and the present are kind of in some sense put on even grammatical footing or whether or not they're disassociated in the language. So, for example, a German quite naturally says, morgen regnet es or morgen ist es kalt, which quite literally translate to, you know, tomorrow rain it or tomorrow it cold.
Whereas we would say tomorrow it's going to be cold or it's going to rain.
It's going to be cold or it will be cold or it will rain. Yeah, exactly. We have to kind of signal and think in every time we speak about the future being something viscerally different than the present.
And you're saying that that has an impact on our financial decisions?
Yeah. So, well, at least that's what I'm finding statistically. If there is really no deep difference between the future and the present, then savings today for tomorrow suddenly just seems a little bit more natural and becomes a little bit easier. On the flip side of that, as your language in some sense pushes the future further and further away from the present, it makes it harder for you to save for retirement.
Because the future seems so far away and the present is right now and here.
Exactly.
Well, so if your research is correct, then what are we supposed to do? Start speaking German?
So the research suggests that that would certainly help with our savings rate. I think that's a little, that's a little far to push it. I would never advocate kind of radical wholesale elimination of the future tense in English. But what I'm really pushing in this research is trying to illuminate the subtle and slightly unconscious ways that the ways that we speak can affect the ways that we think and how those can have really, really deep impacts on our decision-making behavior.
Keith Chen is a professor of economics at Yale University. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And finally to Southern Illinois, where drug agents raided a home they thought was a meth lab after neighbors complained. Turns out the family that lived there was making homemade maple syrup. The agents stood down and the owner of the home gave them some syrup for the road and offered an invitation to those suspicious neighbors to come by sometime and have some pancakes. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.